Radio Gorgeous, we are your new best friend.
I'm on the top of the world looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world.
Today, I'd like to introduce Sarah Tucker. She's an award-winning travel journalist and broadcaster. She's presented for the BBC's holiday programme. She devised and presented the Jazz FM travel programme. She also contributes to Traveller magazine. She's a yoga teacher and she's very interested in spirituality. But the most important thing is she's a single mother who lives in southwest London with her son, two tortoises, two gerbils, and how many fish?
Ten fish.
Oh, 10 fish. Yeah, come.
Yeah. I sound busy, don't I? I sound very busy when you put it that way. Yeah.
Well, I know that you are because you just got back at Christmas. You went to Antarctica. So tell me about that.
Antarctica is one of those places that I think is on a lot of people's bucket lists. And there were quite a few people on the cruise that I went on who had chosen to go on it because it was their seventh continent. Ages range from a young boy of seven to a couple in their 70s. And there was about 90 on board.
It was a small boat.
It was a small boat. But there was another ship that got stuck in the ice when we were out there. But we didn't get stuck in the ice because we had a very good Russian captain who heard about this other ship and just said it happened actually to one of the greatest explorers, Shackleton.
Yes.
And his ship was demolished, and I think probably, you know, this one will be as well.
Oh.
Simply because the ice just hangs on to the, once you're stuck, it's very, very difficult to get unstuck. But we were in a ship that was originally designed for scientific research, so it's designed for all temperatures and conditions. It was an 8-day trip.
So where do you fly to?
I had an interesting journey because the best way to do it is to fly direct to Buenos Aires from London, and then you fly on from Buenos Aires to Ushuaia in Patagonia.
And then you take
the ship from Ushuaia.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But that's the best way to do it. But I couldn't get a direct flight, so I flew from London to São Paulo in Brazil, then São Paulo to Buenos Aires, then Buenos Aires to Ushuaia, which is not the way to do it. But I got there
in
the end. Also, I strongly recommend Buenos Aires is a sexy city. If Rome is the tease, Paris is the foreplay, Buenos Aires is the sex. Only reason I'm mentioning in this is because a lot of people, when they go to Antarctica, they don't stay very long in Buenos Aires because it's a long journey anyway. But it is very worthwhile staying there for 2 to 3 days, especially on the way back for the journey.
There's enough culture and things to do.
Yeah, and it's always hot. If you go in December, like this year, it was 40 degrees, but it's always above 30 degrees.
So that's really nice after being in Antarctica.
It's very nice. It's a really nice, really, really nice contrast. Yeah. And also, as Antarctica is probably the ultimate male ego trip destination, it is, it's all hail the conquering hero. And it has been mostly men who've conquered it. So Buenos Aires was a really nice balance.
It feels quite feminine.
Yeah. Well, Buenos Aires feels very, very feminine, but it's full of very strong women. When I was there, there was a female guide who showed us around. She talked about the politics. The politics is fascinating. It's not only a city that has a, you know, interesting history, but it has a living history. So all the stuff that's going on now is very much relevant to what's happened over this like past 2 or 3 years. The food is phenomenal. I stayed at...
What is the food like? Steaks, is it?
Well, the steak is superb. Like, I'm not a meat eater, but if you're going to eat meat, eat it in Argentina. It's sort of like, it's not cheap. You know, if you want a good steak, £25 or £30, it's a lot of money. But it is like tasting nectar.
So as a vegetarian, what did you eat?
I wasn't a vegetarian in Buenos Aires. I think that's the nicest way to put it. I think if you're going to, you know, it's a bit like when I was in Canada about 4 or 5 years ago now. I was eating by a campfire with a group of First Nation people and they had moose stew. Now, would I eat moose in any other country or any other environment? No. But because I was there, I ate it. And I think especially when you're traveling, and they know how to cook it, and it's got that sort of degree of reputation, unless you're doing it for obviously sort of specific yeah. reasons, health reasons. Yeah. Or I understand, you know, sort of like psychological reasons, philosophical reasons.
Yeah.
But I've got neither of those things. It's just a sort of like it's a decision I've decided to make.
It's respecting the culture. If someone's made you something with love, you should eat it. Let's get back to Patagonia. So you got on board. How long did it take from Patagonia?
A lot of people think when they leave Patagonia that sort of like blink and they're there, but it takes about 2 days and
it's just so fast.
It is so fast. South Pole. Well, it's the furthest. We went over Christmas. It's the furthest you can possibly get away from the North Pole and Father Christmas. But
yeah, did he still come?
He did. I'll talk about that later. He did come. But you have to cross this passage called the Drake Passage. It's like the oceans meet and consequently it can be very rough water.
The Pacific and
the Atlantic.
Oh my God.
So you've got two oceans that meet.
Yeah.
You know, we had two biologists on board who were, during that 2 days when we were literally out at sea before we saw the first iceberg, we had talks from people who knew about whales, who'd owned their own whale watching company, one lady who was based in Vancouver Island. There's the two ecologists who belonged to this organization called Ocean 90s. And Ocean 90s is an organization that finds out about the life in Antarctica and identifies how to preserve it. They also do things like counting penguins. They count how many penguins there are. When you actually go there, you'll really understand the funny side of that, because there are hundreds of thousands of them. It is bonkers how they have this clicker machine where they click, but they all look alike. They're all like little Charlie Chaplins. So this is why I found that quite amusing. And they were very, very earnest and serious and lovely people, but they're penguin counters, basically.
But were the penguins earnest as well, or were they fun?
The penguins are, in fact, I want to say, you know, David Attenborough's programme, Frozen Planet, sort of prepares you for it when you go to Antarctica, but not completely. That the experience is overwhelming. It's a bit like, I think it's a bit like how you will be if you go and see the opera. You'll either get it or you won't. It'll either stir your emotion, it will touch your soul, and it will give you emotional overload and you will probably cry. Don't cry on deck because your tears will freeze, but it hits the senses. But what can I say? The landscape is so vast that, and the icebergs so vast. We're talking, you know, icebergs not in case of meters, but miles, hundreds of miles of iceberg. We've got mountains. So if a
mountains of ice.
So if you've got mountains sort of like stone and ice above, how big it's going to be underneath. This is why with the other ship, when it was caught in the ice, I think a lot of people will think that the ice is about a meter deep. No, it's
all the way to the bottom.
Exactly. So this is why sort of once you're stuck, you're stuck.
You can rely on Radio Gorgeous.
When you saw the penguins, What was your first, you know, recollection?
We were on the ship for about 2 days. When we first went out, it was about 50 knot, 60 knot winds. So it was rocking heavily. And we had a tour leader called Boris who said, if you're going to take seasickness pills, take it now before we leave, because it is going to be quite rough. By the time we actually saw the icebergs, our first icebergs, which was on the second day in the afternoon, everybody was out on deck. It is one of those feelings, I think, as I said, it depends whether you're just going to do it to tick box the seventh continent, or whether it really means something to you.
Did it mean something to you, obviously?
It did mean something to me. I think it meant something to me in a different way to those who perhaps in their 60s and 70s who were there. You mentioned that I'm sort of interested in spirituality, and there was a spiritualist, well, he said he was a spiritualist on board, and it got to him. But what I was very aware of, because I'm a fictional author, I write fiction novels as well, so it's made me much more an observer of people as well as places as a travel writer. And everyone was reacting in a very different way. Some people were getting very, very emotional. Some people were crying. Some people were just taking photos all the time. So in a way, they weren't they didn't actually take a breath and breathe it in.
Yeah.
They were always one step behind. Yeah. They were always on their iPads. So they never actually put it down and breathed it in.
What about the smell of the birds?
The smell, as we're going over there, there's albatross and terns that sort of like the followers, and the idea of albatross, you know, they're huge birds. They're almost like pterodactyls.
They're the biggest bird. Yeah.
Well, exactly. But perhaps because you've got such a vast landscape behind them with the icebergs and even the whales. Mm. Now, you know, you've got the blue whales, the largest whale in the world. You've got the humpback whales, of which we saw quite a few bridging and sounding. Bridging is when they completely come out of the water. Sounding is when just the... the seals. Now, everyone thinks of seals as sweet, lovable little things, but they eat the penguins, and they can be quite, you know, they can be quite vicious, and they're quite big. And we saw a few of them popping their heads out of the water, looking at us with their big brown eyes as though they're completely innocent, and then ripping a penguin apart, you know, which is sort of
it's quite a shock.
What I personally, getting back to your original question, what I personally got out of it is that I'd come from London, which was quite grey and rainy. I'd gone to Buenos Aires, which were very, very hot, and I arrived in this place that was full of light. Even if on great days, and we did have some grey days, but on sunshine days where the sky was blue, the white that reflected off the ice was a blistering white. It was like being in a cold heaven, actually. Because it was so bright. And when you're confronting with a bright light, initially, sort of like you squint because you can't take it all in, and everyone was putting on their sunglasses. And we kept them, but it woke you up. Wow. And it was wonderful to be in a place that was literally flooded with light all the time. It lifted
It's summer there.
Yes, and it lifts your spirits. It's, you know, one thing that I think, especially last year, and especially in you know, people in the UK complain of a lot during the winter, is the seasonal affective disorder. Mm. It, you know, it does, the grey days do affect you. A bit of sunshine.
So you had like maximum sunshine that you'll ever have in your life.
I know, it was, honestly, if you like light, you like light, and I don't, as someone, I don't...
I wear eye masks when I sleep, I can't bear light at night.
I don't like, and this is a funny thing, I don't like the cold, and sort of like it's the cold, you know, it can be, you can get up to 100 and minus 70, you know, 170 degrees. So it's very, very, very cold, but because everything is fascinating, you don't notice, genuinely, you don't notice the cold. The company I went with, One Oceans Expedition, they kit you out with all the gear.
Yes, so they give you an extra clothing and fantastic.
Yes, so it's all...
Because I was going to say, do you have to take ski stuff?
Well, this is it. Basically, what I did is I took my my salopettes, and you don't have to take boots because they supply you with wellies, have a good pair of what I call, you know, warm socks, layers. So lots of thin layers, about 4 or 5 layers, but very thin layers. And then have a sort of like a thin jumper on top. Just prepare for ski, and they will give you an all-in-one red, what I call sort of like a onesie. But actually, that was very good because in a lot of the photographs, when you see the photographs...
I can't wait. We'll have these on the website, by the way.
Well, in the photographs, all you see is white and black. So you see, or the blue, or the different colours, because obviously with the icebergs, some of the light refracts and they look. Yeah. So it's beautiful. And the red, everybody stands out because they're in bright red. And so it makes it for a very, you know, very interesting photographs. So as far as being kitted out in the right gear is concerned, that's no problem. Mm. We were fed extremely well because I think everyone, and breakfast, usually started about 6:30, and I'm one of those people who doesn't eat breakfast because I don't have time to eat breakfast, and I know that's bad. But anyway,
and you were eating the whole lot.
I was eating the whole. But it's very, very good. You know, it's
Sarah. You went against your normal character.
I did. It's sort of, I brought out eat breakfast eating in me. but we had two excursions a day while we were there. We were actually in the Antarctic.
Did you go on little boats?
We went on these boats called Zodiacs,
and they can go in the ice.
They can go amongst the ice.
Wow. Did you feel in danger at any point?
No, I didn't. And that is all due to the fact that the crew were, and the tour leaders were extremely experienced. Like, one of the crew was a lady called Sunny, and she was one of the four women team to reach the South Pole 20 years ago, actually. And I think it's something particularly of interest to gorgeous listeners, because they tried to get sponsorship from over 2,500 companies around the world to sponsor the first all-women trip to the South Pole. Could they get it? No. And the reasons they were given were things like, why are you doing it? You're women. Why do you want to reach the South Pole? Men have done it already. Oh. Why do you want to? You're going to be sharing tents. Are you lesbians? Don't you have husbands to look after? Oh. Extremely.
God, well, that was 20 years ago. Let's hope things have moved on a bit. But look, Antarctica sounds absolutely amazing, and we're running out of time now. So you also, as soon as you got back, you ended up in Malta.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Talk about contrast. I think the best place to, one of the best places to have Christmas is the South Pole. One of the best places that I've ever spent New Year was in Malta. And I think when people think of Malta, and certainly I did before I went there, I thought of war, because the main island and also the small island of Gozo is got loads of chapels, loads of war memorials. And yes, the island did win the George Cross, and everybody does own a George Cross. But I went because I was interested in the not only the archaeology, but also the creative side of the cultural side. There's the Manuel Theatre, which is a very old, beautiful theatre right in the beautiful capital of Valletta, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's got a very deep natural harbour, so you've got very big ships coming there. Steven Spielberg, he visits about 4 or 5 times a year because he filmed some of the Indiana Jones films there.
Oh, so he loves it now. Yeah.
He loves it. He loves it there. You know, Cameron Mackintosh, he has a place there. Mm. And, you know, he offered to actually build a theatre in Valletta, and they turned him down. And he said, you know, I'll help build it, or I'll fund it, and I'll bring all my productions that I produce, you know, in London and around the world, I'll bring them to Malta. And they said no. Now, obviously, that's for some reason, I don't know why, can't say, but it's a cultural, and it's a creative and artistic. It's got a heartbeat, and that's what I was interested in. I also went there to meet some of the, I'm always fascinated by, I think, people like who are olive growers and beekeepers. And Malta means honey. Means honey. So I wanted to, I love honey. I love how, you know, honey on porridge, you know, especially now after Antarctica. Mm-hmm. And I went to see quite a few beekeepers who are fascinating, the way they talk about honey and the way they can tell you about whether it's orange blossom or the different herbs and flowers that the honey comes from. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating, and I recommend if anybody goes to Malta.
Yeah, what time of year would you go?
We see again. It is a destination that sells itself throughout the year. It is lovely in the spring, and it is lovely in the autumn, and it's very hot in the summer. However, for example, last year in August it was raining during August, but in October it was, you know, over 30 degrees, which caused havoc with things like the olive growers, because they want it sort of hot at a certain time and rainy, and it was the other way around. Again, I have got a thing about olives. I can eat whole tins of things. And they have found a white olive. They believe it's unique to Malta.
Yeah.
And I tasted them. And to be fair, they taste just like other olives, but they are white and they look like white beans, but they are, and so you can go and meet the olive growers. They will tell you all about it. But I think it's particularly interesting because everywhere I went, especially with, you know, some I've mentioned just two there, they said, "Oh, Jamie was here last year," and I'm thinking, they said Jamie Oliver, he was here. He sent some of his people down, and I was like, "Oh, right." So everywhere I went that was had something interesting, because also got the wine there as well in Malta, which unfortunately I didn't have time to do because I was there for such a short time. I found out that he'd been there before, and they all said, "Oh yes, that his people were here. They wanted to hear. Yes, his people wanted to be here for an hour, but they ended up being here for the whole day." And it's that sort of place you go, and you think, "Oh, Malta, having a short break there." But it's you'll want to have stayed longer, or certainly as soon as you go, you'll want to come back.
Radio Gorgeous, we'll never let you down. Catch your breath now, because we're now going to quickly go through what's hot and what's not for 2014.
2014, travel trends for 2014. Yeah. Well, I went to World Travel Market, which happens every year, last year. And one of the things that is allegedly hot is something called PANCs. So PANCs are professional aunts, no kids. And professional aunts, no kids are basically those women who are aunties of children but don't have any children of their own.
Yeah, which are more and more.
And they are taking children away. So they have the disposable income, yeah, and they are very inventive and very creative. And so what we're going to see more now of is women, and so women doing by themselves. So I suppose the thing of, you know, you've got panks, you could have punks, you could have professional uncles, no kids, but that sounds a bit dodgy, doesn't
it? I know someone who is a professional uncle, no kids.
Yeah.
And he takes his sister and their kids skiing every year.
Yeah.
You know. So.
But it's
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's going to be increasingly so.
Yeah.
And so consequently, I think our younger generation, teenage generation, are going to experience different ways of traveling, which I think is a really, really good thing, as are these people who have possibly been used to traveling in certain ways with, you know, their peers, to short break destinations. And they're going to want to share experiences like more like a safari. Mm. But
how
I think
can they afford it if they're that age?
Again, if they haven't had children, they've had a sort of like more disposable. Yeah, they've got more disposable. If they haven't,
so it's basically go and find a rich relation and go travelling with them.
Well, is it that's sort of like that seems yeah, to that yeah. seems to be it. Also, what is happening? There's been a growth in sort of like the markets, especially in Russia and the wealthy Indians and wealthy Chinese coming yes. over and travelling much more to the UK. London has become a real hub, not only for people to buy properties, but also to holiday in and short break in. And I think the message...
Good for us.
It is yeah. very, very good for us. But also I think the message has got through that you need more than a few days to do London or a week to do England. Because I think, especially with these larger countries, they think, oh, you're going to England or you're going to sort of one of these smaller European countries and you can do them in a week. And the message has actually got through that no, you can't do yeah, them in a week. Yeah. And so people from are staying longer in this
right.
country, which is good, which I think will be very, very yeah. good for our economy. We have become as a nation, much more, I've mentioned about Malta before, about sort of like interested in the war, but we are much more interested in achieving when we go overseas. So it's things like, you know, learning to dive, learning
yes.
to paint, learning
yes.
to sort of like do pottery,
yeah.
but also experiential travel. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned about the trip to Antarctica.
Yeah.
They verged on an expedition.
Yes.
It was actually, you know, one ocean expeditions. People will want to go on an expedition and mm. on a journey. So it's not just a go to a hotel and stay in a hotel for a week or stay in a hotel for 2 weeks. They will want to make more of the journey, which again,
it is an
experience, and mm. it's a good thing because I think mm. people are not traveling so much now about what they want to see and do. It's how it a place or a journey makes them think and feel.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for coming on to Radio Gorgeous today. And if anyone wants to follow you, are you on Twitter or have you got a website?
I am on Twitter. You can follow me on Mad as a Tucker and also on my website. It's sarahtucker.info/blog.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah.
Such a feeling's coming over me. There is wonder in most everything I see. Not a cloud in the sky, got the sun in my eyes, and I won't be surprised if it's a dream. Everything I want the world to be is now coming true, especially for me. And the reason is clear, it's because you are here. You're the nearest thing to heaven that I've seen. I'm on the top of the world, looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world. not the same. In the leaves on the trees and the touch of the breeze, there's a pleasing sense of happiness for me. There is only one wish on my mind. When this day is through, I hope that I will find that tomorrow will be just the same for you and me. All I need will be mine if you are here. I'm on the top of the world looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love that I've found ever since you've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world. You've been around. Your love's put me at the top of the world.
RadioGorgeous.com